to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, and we link to our guests. We'll be giving you the link to today's guest in just a moment. You can click there and check out all the information that our guests have to offer throughout the years that we've been doing this. This is our anniversary month, and we started in 2007, and here we are in 2015. It's just an amazing thing to think about. Well, something else that's kind of amazing to think about, and I have to say I thought about this long and hard as far as the introduction to the program. What I'm going to do here is list some things for you. You're after this program, odds are you're going to be able to think faster, improve your memory, prevent or delay dementia and Alzheimer's, protect yourself from stress and depression, feel vitality, energy, and aliveness, engage with people, deepen relationships, and connect with your loving center of peace. And I'm talking about the new breakfast cereal. No, it's not a new breakfast cereal, but it should be. Nutrigenesis is the name of the book, The Nutrigenesis Diet and Lifestyle. You're going to be upgrading your brain and upgrading your life. And my guest is the author. He's a PhD in psychology, Brant Courtwright. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I think it'd make a great breakfast cereal, but that's another show. What I find fascinating is, and you and I had a chance to talk about this a little bit earlier, I did not know one particular aspect of stress, and I was reading this in your book, about the effect of stress. Now, I did know that if a person lives in a stressful lifestyle, that they risk the potential of weight gain. Because that stressful disposition causes the body to want to hang on to the fat and so on and so forth, which may be also connected with the other aspect that really interested me, and that was that it actually induces or encourages, if you will, inflammation, the swelling in the body. Mm-hmm. And when we were talking, I was having real problems with this. I mean, it's not over yet, but at least it's better than it was. And so I take a look at our Western civilization and thinking, I can't be the only one that is suffering from this. The doctors can't seem to figure out what the problem is as far as the inflammation. In other words, that's separate from anything else that we're talking about as far as me and the doctors. So they don't make the connection between stress and inflammation. But inflammation is a very dangerous thing because when your body becomes inflamed, what we see on the outside is like, you know, a swollen elbow or wrist or knee or other parts of the body that swell up. But what we don't seem to realize is that that's compressing all of the nerves and veins and arteries and all of the infrastructure, if you will, inside the body. And what if you get that in your brain, which is where we're headed? Can we talk a little bit as we start our program about that? Because, as I said before, I can't be the only one that is suffering this, I'll call it condition or dis-ease, in regards to inflammation.
Yeah, that's right. Inflammation is one of the most toxic things to our brain and our lifestyle. And chronic stress is one of the big reasons for it. My book is actually The Neurogenesis, Diet and Lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And neurogenesis is the process of making new brain cells. And this happens throughout our entire life. They used to think that it stopped when we were in our early 20s.
Yeah, and they used to tell us that when we would drink, if we drank too much, you know, they would kill brain cells.
Also, yes, that's right. So it turns out that inflammation is one of the real poisons or toxins to the brain, and it decreases our rate of neurogenesis, the rate at which we make new brain cells. And the rate of neurogenesis, the rate at which we make new brain cells, is one of the most important biomarkers of health that we have, and particularly for brain health. So you're right. It's chronic stress is one of the big problems. They estimate now that 80% of all doctor visits are either stress-related or mind-body related. It's considered, in many ways, the leading cause of death, although no death certificate says died of stress. Chronic stress is one of the real diseases of civilization. Yes. So there's good stress and there's bad stress. Good stress is short-term and moderate stress. That's the kind of stress that makes us stronger. So like when we stress our muscles through exercise, they break down, they build up stronger because we give them a break. We're not continuously exercising them. If we continuously exercise them, it's chronic stress and they just degrade. And it's the same with all kinds of stress, emotional stress, physical stress, mental stress, even spiritual.
You know, that's one area that I've often thought was immune, if you will, because, you know, it was more esoteric. It wasn't, you know, connected in the same way to the physical body as, say, your heart, which they consider the seat of emotion and so on and so forth. You can't have dis-ease in your spirit, in your soul, if you will, but it's connected.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's this kind of chronic, ongoing stress, which is really damaging. And for many people, that is a lifestyle. We are always connected to the internet, to our cell phones, getting text messages. We're on 24/7. And we need to have times where we are just allow our body to return to homeostatic balance, where we just unplug from everything, where we can relax, where we can de-stress. This is hugely important for brain health and for lowering inflammation.
Brant Courtwright is my guest. We're talking about Neurogenesis, the diet and lifestyle plan, if you will, and his book, The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle, the title of the book. You can actually go to that website, neurogenesisdiet.com, neurogenesisdiet.com, and of course we are also linked to his website. So we encourage you to check out the information that he has. I again find this when I first received the information and started looking through the book, reading through the book, it fascinates me because of all of the, I'll just say the misinformation, if you will, and it wasn't necessarily intentional. This is just what we knew at the time about the brain and its role in our lives. I guess we could use computer analogies that it is the processor that keeps the rest of the body running, and that even though you could have another machine, you could have another machine keep the rest of the body running if the brain shut down, there isn't really any life there because there's something about the whole connectedness of all of the parts in the way that they're connected. And I got to tell you, by comparison to when I took a look at my first carburetor, I used to tell people that whoever developed this thing had way too much time on their hands, because it was real complicated and I didn't understand it. Well, so's the human body. And I don't know that they had way too much time on their hands, whoever they were, or he or she was. But it is fascinating to consider. And I always go back to this one line, this one quote, if you will, from the movie Temple Grandin, where she's going through the slaughterhouse. And when they show her the stunning, if you will, the killing of a piece of livestock, the question that she asks is, where did it go? Where did it go? It was just there. Where did it go? And I often wonder what it is that animates us and how that relates here to this process of neurogenesis that can take us to a place where, and we've had people on talking about thriving. Most of us are just surviving. And some of us are doing a bad job at that. We'd like to thrive. We'd like to be energized and go out and do things and so to speak, as the phrase goes, you know, put the world on its ear. You know, I mean, make a big splash in that regard. and so forth. And yet none of us seem, most of us don't seem to have the wherewithal, the time, but maybe most importantly, we don't have the energy.
Yeah, that's right. That just about all of us are functioning well below our capacity. And that means that our brain is functioning well below capacity. And we all just stumbled into this innocently. Nobody knew this. We live in a very neurotoxic world. And this neurotoxic world degrades the possibility of our brain. And what has just really in the last few years become clear is just what some of these neurotoxins are, as well as what are things we can do to actually upgrade the brain and operate at a higher level.
So let me ask you if we can delve into the aspects of, I mean, we could sit here and continue discussing the problem. And I think pretty much we're all pretty much aware of the problem, the issues, the struggles, the strife, and so forth. Let's dive into, I mean, since we started with the issue of stress, let's talk about some of your observations and your feelings about how to resolve, how to minimize, if not eliminate, stress.
Okay, very good. So there are physical stressors and there are emotional stressors. And most of what we suffer from are emotional stressors. You know, there's physical stressors such as like chronic noise. People who live near airports have higher rates of heart disease and heart attacks because of a chronic, low-grade physical stress that noise pollution can produce. But what most people experience is emotional stress. And there's different kinds of emotional stress that we can experience. Again, temporary stress and chronic stress. And mostly we experience stress in the form of feeling like our self-image is threatened in some way, or we feel stress when we're not certain we're kind of up to a task. We feel stress when we feel like we don't quite have the resources to deal. If we feel like we've got the resources to deal, then it's fun, it's exciting. It's like going on a roller coaster. It's great. But if we learned about, do we have the resources to deal with this? Or if it's chronic, then we experience stress that is much more difficult to deal with. And so we need to look at, okay, well, what are we actually feeling stressed by? Is it not having enough money? Is it that I'm in a low-paying job in a society that rewards people for making a lot of money? Am I in a marginalized group? Marginalized groups experience, in general, much more stress than dominant groups. or are there particular relationships where I feel stressed? Am I in any bullying relationships or relationships with people who I don't feel safe with? So look at what are the sources of stress in our lives and then begin to reduce them, begin to get some kind of handle on it. And so part of that involves learning to relax, learning to get the parasympathetic nervous system to engage, which just brings this sense of fullness. Optimistic mm-hmm. attitude is better than a pessimistic one. Optimists mm-hmm. live 19% longer than pessimists, probably because pessimists are always bracing for the, they have a continuous stress response. If, you know, one of the things that human beings have that primates don't, all primates have social stress, but lower order primates like chimpanzees can't really control their internal environment in the same way human beings do. So human beings have a number of different identities called intersectionality. It's like we exist on many levels as many different kinds of social identity. And so if I am in a poor paying job that is getting lots of stress, and I don't have much satisfaction in that. Are there other things I can do in my life that do give me satisfaction? So I may be a parent who's taking care of my grandkids partly during the week, and I can get some satisfaction from that. I can get some good, positive, loving reinforcement from that. There, I don't have to just identify with being in a low-paying job. I can identify with also being another part of society and contributing in a different kind of way. And what are the specific situations that are generating? Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break here, and we're going to come back with more in just a moment. I'm talking with Brent Courtwright, and he is the author of The Neurogenesis. The Neurogenesis Lifestyle. It's basically, it's more than that, actually. It's the Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle. And we're going to talk more about this when we get back. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking about the Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle. Basically, we're going to upgrade your brain and upgrade your life, and we all could use a little upgrade from time to time. We're talking with the author, Brant Courtwright, and he is a PhD in psychology. And I have to tell you, Brant, I took psychology in college a few years ago, and I really enjoyed it. I didn't, as far as grades are concerned, didn't do so well. But I really enjoyed it because it was fascinating. It was maybe the beginning of the process that I started going through personal growth and development programs and workshops, you know, these five-day intensives where you go in there and you try to find out who you are and why you are the way you are and what got you there and so forth. Mm-hmm. And trying to, you know, maybe release some of the stuff that I'd been holding on to that was keeping me back. Yes. But we've been focusing an awful lot, and I know there are other chapters in the book on other issues in regards to the conditions that we suffer with, but it seems to me that, I think I'm going to focus on the issue of stress and distress and so forth on the human body that really seems to be, from my perspective, my observation, the main culprit here, because if we didn't have that element in our lives to the degree that it is diminishing our lives, because they say that a certain amount of challenge in one's life is good. It sort of builds character, as they say. Too much of anything, too much of any of a good thing is not necessarily good. And we're getting a lot more, we're getting many more challenges in our lives, as you elucidated to in our first segment. And a lot of people, they want to get off the grid, as the phrase goes. They want to disconnect with what's been happening with my wife and I in the last month or so on a financial level, not so much income, but as far as the financial institutions and their ability to make sure that our funds that we so willingly deposit in there are secure and they're safe. And we've had two instances thus far where not so safe. I'm about ready to say, forget the financial institutions and go back to my mattress, you know. Not very practical, but certainly that's where the stress starts to pick up, you know. I have my wife check my blood pressure almost every day. And some days it's down there, you know, 118 over 79 or 132 over 80 or something like that. And other days it's 150 plus. And she knows why, because, well, I know it's because this morning we're dealing with this issue and la, and it's like, boy, what a gauge, you know, to check your blood pressure each day. Now, you can get paranoid too, but I'm doing it more to just kind of see what's happening. And it seems to me like no medication is going to solve the problem, that it has to be done on a higher level, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That people get addicted to stress, right? That a little bit of stress, as you're saying, is good. It challenges us. It takes us to a higher level. It brings out new capacities, new abilities. It makes us stronger. But this chronic stress at some level, it feels kind of good because there's a certain aliveness, all that adrenaline pumping through and those glucocorticoid stress hormones. There's a way it feels good, but after a while, it begins to just run us down. We can't continue that way. It begins to lower our immune system, heart disease, diabetes, just all this stuff that we know is terrible for the body. But there's a way that we get addicted to it. It's almost like we lose contact with our basic sense of aliveness, and that gets replaced with this stress response. We feel like we're really alive when we're really stressed, but it's a kind of crisis aliveness. It's not really the kind of just calm, loving, peaceful aliveness that is just intrinsically there. It's a kind of hyper-stimulated, overstimulated, over-caffeinated often stress response that lowers the overall quality of our life. And so dealing with stress, it's a holistic approach. We need to approach this body, heart, mind, spirit at every level of our being. And so dealing with chronic stress, there's many ways of dealing with that, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. One function of spiritual practice is that it tunes us into a deeper, peaceful center, right? All the world's spiritual traditions are unanimous in saying that our fundamental identity is soul or spirit, some deeper spiritual ground, is deeply peaceful. It's the source of peace. And so when we meditate or we pray, when we do spiritual practice, it's designed to take us deeper into ourselves so that we can connect with this deeper peaceful center. And that peace then begins to radiate out into the rest of our being, into our body, heart, and mind. So spiritual practice, meditation, devotional prayer, compassion practices, this appear to increase neurogenesis, appear to increase the rate at which the brain makes new brain cells, and they also are powerful stress reducers, powerful relaxers as well.
Hmm. This is fascinating stuff. I'm curious as to your background. What was it about psychology in particular, and then diving into this whole aspect of neurogenesis that so intrigued you?
Mm. Well, I was very interested in spirituality through a background of taking a lot of psychedelics in college. And through spiritual practice, I realized that in going inside, a lot of the barriers to our deeper soul or spirit are really psychological. And so I began to think, and many in the field of transpersonal psychology and spiritual psychology have come to this conclusion, that we really need a psycho-spiritual practice. We need ways of working psychologically to these inner barriers, to inner deepening, and we need spiritual practices to access our deeper identity. And so it was really through psychology and interest in the brain, because everything we experience, every feeling, every desire, every spiritual state, everything we experience comes to us through the brain. And if our brain is operating at a high level, we'll have a high level of aliveness and awakeness. Mm-hmm. And if our brain is operating at a lower level, it degrades every level of our experiencing self. So this book is about increasing how the brain operates. So as we talked about earlier, they used to think neurogenesis stopped in our early 20s. Now they realize it happens throughout our lifetime. They did this one experiment and they gave them a holistic treatment. Actually, they didn't call it a holistic treatment, that's my word for it, but they called it an enriched environment, where they gave them things like running wheels to exercise on, a great diet, nesting materials, lots of places to explore, novel environments, lots of other friendly mice to play with and mate with, and they found that they increased their rate of neurogenesis 5 times. And with that, they became kind of like super mice, right? That they had big cognitive advantages over their normal neurogenesis rate peers. So had robust emotional resilience. That is, they were protected from anxiety, from stress, and depression. And they also seemed to have higher immunity as well. So it turns out that all of us, given just this neurotoxic world we live in, can increase our rate of neurogenesis by probably at least 5 times. Because since that research was done, they've discovered many that increase our rate of neurogenesis. The science is so new here. This is brand new stuff, just showing how our rate of neurogenesis is tied into the quality of our life.
The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle, upgrade your brain and upgrade your life. Brent Courtwright is my guest, and we're talking about the subject of stimulating the brain, of helping it to generate the cells that will help us to continue moving forward. You know, I remember years ago, and we're talking 1994 and thereabouts, when I first got into computers, and I built them. You could bring me all of the parts, and I could put it together from the motherboard on up, all the peripherals, the drives, the mouse, the keyboard, the monitor, other things that you wanted to add to it, on and on and on, special sound cards and on. And my observation when I was sharing this with my father, who went to college to become a computer programmer back in the 70s. So I remember the pinhole punch cards and the fanfold paper boxes that he'd bring home. And my observation was that the computer, consciously or otherwise, was designed after the brain. I mean, it just made common sense to me that that was the case. That you had the processor that ran everything, if you will. You had memory. You had a place to do your work, the desktop, if you will. And of course, the subsequent random access memory. You had ways of, shall we say, downloading the data to a disk or a floppy, or print it on a paper. You were able to manipulate the data using the mouse and keyboard, and you could see what you were doing on the monitor. And all of those things would relate to the various attributes of who we are as human beings, as far as the physical makeup. What I never understood was why my father said, "Oh, no, you're wrong." And he just didn't see it. That's all. It went, you know, he just didn't see that. And, and we've talked subsequently. But it seems to me like the comparison to this whole aspect of neurogenesis is sort of comparable to malware or a virus getting into the software and just eating away at our ability, again, to carry out simple functions on the computer, to carry out simple functions sometimes in our own lives. And many of us, you know, we want to do so much. You know, we have these big dreams. We want to change the world. We want to make it a better place. You call this both a diet and a lifestyle. So let's talk a little bit about the diet aspect of this. What is it that you are encouraging us to, and I'm going to put it in this context, ingest through our five and or six senses?
Okay, good. Yeah, diet is a very big part of this. And I think it's a twofold approach. One is to avoid things that slow down neurogenesis and hurt the brain. And the other thing is to do or to eat those nutrients. The brain is made up of about 2/3 fat. And one of the things we do in most cultures of the world is we eat unhealthy fat. We eat not enough healthy fat. And we eat too much sugar. So unhealthy fat and sugar, too much carbohydrates, lower the rate of neurogenesis. Actually, a rate of neurogenesis in two. It'll cut it by 50%. And when you think about the average American diet of a young school child, and they start off the day with, I don't know what, sugar frosted flakes and orange juice, they're getting tons of sugar, bad fats, unhealthy fats, not enough good fats. It's terrible for the brain. It's really awful for the brain. We are raising a generation and have a poorly equipped brain that is operating well below what it could. And it's not just school kids, it's all of us. In this world, we have just eaten foods that seemed reasonably healthy, and now we're discovering, in particular the last few years, we need to avoid as much as we can unhealthy fats. And we need to have a level of carbohydrate that our body can support, which is different for everybody. But most people in America, it's estimated that 50 to 80% of the population of America is insulin resistant, which means that we have higher than optimal levels of blood sugar, and we have higher than optimal levels of insulin circulating. And both those things lower our cognitive functioning. You can trace on a graph almost perfectly cognitive decline and blood sugar levels. So, you know, a good test that anybody can get when they get their yearly physical exam is something called the hemoglobin. And if your hemoglobin A1C is elevated above 4.5, if it's elevated, even if it's not diabetic, even if it's not even in the pre-diabetic range, if it's just elevated, it would behoove you to do everything you can to lower your carbohydrate content of what of your diet and to see if you can regain insulin sensitivity, because you're going to protect your brain. And if you don't, your brain is going to go downhill much faster. The other thing is unhealthy fats. So by unhealthy fats, what I mean are oxidized fats. So, for example, from fried food or from cooking in vegetable oil. You know, we've all been told for decades now that we should cook with different kinds of vegetable oils. Well, it turns out that's the exact opposite of what we should be doing. Vegetable oils go rancid at very low temperatures. In fact, cooking with any kind of vegetable oil produces a lot of oxidized fats. And when those oxidized fats go into your bloodstream, what they do is, first of all, they oxidize the cholesterol that's in your bloodstream. That produces heart disease, narrowing of the arteries, and it also increases inflammation. So we want to cook with coconut oil or butter, or even better, ghee, pure or clarified butter, or even tallow, or even lard. We want to cook with saturated fats. And we also want to eat a lot of good, healthy fats. So things like avocados, nuts, grass-fed beef, pastured chicken, wild-caught fish, as well as pastured dairy, pastured eggs. Pastured eggs are one of the very best things you can do for your brain, because your brain actually needs a certain amount of cholesterol. So they've recently discovered that cholesterol isn't the problem. It's oxidized cholesterol that's the problem. Non-oxidized cholesterol is good for you. You need a certain amount of it. In fact, many people have too low cholesterol levels, and it begins to interfere with their memory. So something like a quarter of the population now is on statins, where they're cholesterol is getting lower and lower. And as that happens, more and more people are complaining about memory problems. And there are some people who believe that there's another wave of Alzheimer's coming partly because of this. So we need to increase our intake of good, healthy fats. And one in particular is helpful, and that is omega-3 fatty acids, which we get from fish oil or fish. So, as I said, the brain is about two-thirds fat, and of that, one-third of that fat is DHA. And DHA is one of these three omega-3 fatty acids. So the omega-3 fatty acids are ALA, EPA, and DHA. And DHA is by far the most important. So if you want to take a fish oil supplement, and I think probably most everybody would benefit from this, taking 2 to 4 to 5 grams a day, you want a fish oil supplement that is high in DHA content and is also molecularly distilled, because otherwise mercury can contaminate it. And mercury is a very potent neurotoxin, probably the second most potent neurotoxin that we know of, second only to plutonium. So we don't want mercury. So molecularly distilled omega-3 fish oil would be very helpful for most people. Other things would be like blueberries. Blueberries are like Miracle-Gro for the brain. Brain just takes off with blueberries. Mm. And another one is hesperidin. In the book, I give about 30 or 40 different nutrients that are helpful for increasing neurogenesis. But hesperidin, you know, some things like omega-3 fatty acids, they increase the rate at which new brain cells are formed. However, many of those new brain cells are pruned by the brain. They die off. About 50% of them die off pretty quickly. Unless you do other things. And that's why this whole holistic treatment is helpful, because different things support each other. So hesperidin, which is this bioflavonoid derived from citrus fruits, increases the survival rate of new brain cells. So it's also good to do hesperidin as a supplement as well, or through citrus fruits. Because that keeps the new brain cells alive. And that's what we want. We want an increase in our rate of neurogenesis, and we want to keep those new brain cells alive as well.
This, to me, is, again, it's so vital. The neurogenesis diet and lifestyle. Brent Courtwright is my guest. We're talking about upgrading your brain and upgrading your life, giving you the opportunity to really thrive. And you know, it's hard to turn off the mind chatter as far as the things that are going on in our lives that then, of course, generates that stress that we talked about, that we've talked about throughout most of the program. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned earlier, too, that there are a lot of folks that feel like the best way to, you know, okay, this whole diet thing, that's great. My wife actually uses coconut oil. She that's all she uses now. And we've learned some very valuable lessons in using it. Number one, I love the way that it smells when she's cooking with it. It also burns at a much lower temperature, so you have to be really careful not to put it on too high a heat. So be very careful in that regard. And it also turns to liquid at a much lower temperature. It usually comes in a sort of a pasty consistency, white. But if it gets like over 75 or 80 degrees, it's like water. It's like a liquid, which is okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that's what happens to it. But a lot of people feel like, great, I'm doing all this stuff. I'm taking all these things, the omega-3s, and dudes using coconut oil and blueberries and on and on and on. But it's not enough. And so then the other aspect of your book is dealing with lifestyle. And we all can't move into the woods. You know, we all can't go live in Alaska, as it were, to get away from it all, because it's been said that it doesn't, if you're dealing with issues, it doesn't matter where you move to, you're taking them with you. So let's address the issue of lifestyle now.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's, you know, just moving into the woods, that may work for some people. But for some people, they would also feel understimulated in the woods. We need kind of like optimal stimulation. So too much is damaging and creates a stress response. Too little leaves our brain deprived. And with deprivation or not enough stimulation, neurogenesis rates also go down. So we need a kind of optimal engagement for the brain. And so we can certainly do that living in society, as long as we're mindful of things like occasionally just unplugging from the internet or just giving ourselves space or, for example, getting enough sleep. You know, most Americans don't get enough sleep. And when we don't get enough sleep, it decreases the rate of our neurogenesis. It lowers the melatonin in our bodies. And melatonin is very important for immunity. And also, the brain cleans itself when we sleep. Just about everybody needs 7 or 8 hours a night of sleep. Some people can get by on 6. Almost nobody can get by on less than 6. And they didn't realize until actually last year that during sleep, the brain cleans itself out of the toxins that have accumulated during the day. They never used to know how the brain cleaned itself. Because in the body cleans itself with the lymph system, the lymphatic system. But that doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier. And just last year, in 2014, they discovered a new system in the brain that they called the glymphatic system, after the glial cells that do a lot of house cleaning tasks in the brain. And so when we sleep, our neurons actually shrink by about, some people say a third, other researchers say up to 60%. And cerebral spinal fluid sort of floods the brain, sort of bathes the brain in this shower that carries away toxins that have built up, particularly beta amyloid. And beta amyloid is this toxin that is implicated with Alzheimer's, that people who have Alzheimer's have high rates of beta amyloid in the brain. So if we get enough sleep, we wake up feeling refreshed. And that refreshed feeling, in part, is because the brain is no longer full of toxins. When we don't get enough sleep, you know how you get like 2, 3, 4 hours sleep and you wake up and you take a shower, and even after a shower, you kind of feel dirty, like you haven't had a shower. Well, that's the toxic buildup in your brain, is that your brain has not had a chance to clean itself. And when we don't clean the brain, neurogenesis rates slow way down, memory consolidation doesn't happen, we get cognitive deficits after even one night of not enough sleep. Immunity goes down. So as a lifestyle issue, sleep, it's turning out, is hugely important. It's also, not getting enough sleep is also now considered to be a carcinogen. Our immune system goes way down when we don't get enough sleep. So sleeping well is important. And also, turning off the computer an hour or two before we go to sleep, so that the blue end of the spectrum, which comes from a computer or an iPad, doesn't affect our brain, because that turns down our melatonin production, and so it's often hard to get to sleep. So some people are now trying to use an amber screen or getting amber-colored sunglasses that they wear at night, or just turning off the computer an hour or two beforehand in order to get a better night's sleep. So sleep is one thing.
Yeah.
Travel is wonderful. Travel has a way of just teaching us about whole new environments and exposing us to whole new environments. And when we are exposed to new environments, we're also learning new things. And so learning constantly throughout our lives is very, very important. You know, the brain thrives on this kind of optimal stimulation. And part of that is mental stimulation. So reading, writing, even if it's just emails or Facebook posts, if you or just talking with friends, talking about ideas, talking about new things you've learned, talking about what's going on in your life and how you're feeling. So using this verbal side of our brain, the left side of our brain, for reading and for writing, and also using the right side of our brain, listening to music can be very helpful, or learning a musical instrument can stimulate our brain. We need to stimulate our brain in a variety of ways. Just doing a video game or a computer game, it turns out the research behind that is more and more showing that, those skills do not generalize to the rest of the brain. That doing crossword puzzles or a computer game helps you do crossword puzzles and helps you do that computer game, but it doesn't help much else. And so the fact that those things don't generalize means that we just need to expose ourselves to new things and to learn new things and to be lifelong learners. You know, the brain, there's a decline in brain function at two times in our lives. One is after we graduate from college, and the other is after we retire. Unless, that is, except for those people who either get jobs that involve using their brain, or when they retire, continue to use their brain in an active way. So it's a use or lose it thing with the brain, for sure. When we use it, we stimulate the brain, we stimulate neurogenesis, we feel better, we enhance our cognitive capacities. When we don't use it, we begin to slide downhill quite quickly. It's amazing how fast the brain begins to deteriorate, particularly in older years. So lifelong learning, whether you're learning in a class, whether you're learning from the web, a webinar, whether you're taking a cooking class or a workshop or whatever it is, but just being open to new learning is hugely helpful for the brain. And it builds what's called cognitive reserve. And cognitive reserve, even when, you know, they've looked at Alzheimer's rates among teachers, and they find teachers have the lowest rate of Alzheimer's. And when they look at their brains, they find out that many of them actually have some of this beta amyloid that we see in Alzheimer's. But because they've used their brains, they have other pathways that have been developed. And so it's protective against Alzheimer's and cognitive decline when we use our brain like this.
Hmm. Well, then I would venture then that in my case, the one video game I enjoy playing is Tetris, which is a puzzle game.
Uh-huh.
But there's a computer game that I bought literally 20 years ago. It was on five little floppy disks. It was called Heaven and Hell, and it was based upon the mythology of Shambhala. And what it was a series of puzzles. And we're talking a lot of puzzles, a lot of levels. I mean, you know, and these puzzles are not sophisticated like they are today. But they were designed, if you can get through them, for matching and figuring out a maze and those kinds of things. And there was a whole lot more, you know, that you'd work your way up the levels and you'd get these little messages of insight from the Shambhala mythology, which I found really fascinating.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just curious as to whether or not games like that, though they be computer games, I mean, they are computer games.
Mm-hmm.
Would the games like that, or there are websites that say, if you come to our website and you play our, I'll say games, because I can't think of any other, other than, you know, take our tests or what have you, you know, it will help to stimulate your brain. What are your thoughts on something like that? Because my biggest concern, and I guess it could still be said for somebody who's writing a book and putting these kinds of exercises in it, that maybe they have a hidden agenda, you know, of some sort. Whereas with the computer, it's even more pernicious because they can hide stuff in there subliminally. You'll never see it. But what are your thoughts about these types of brain-challenging portals, if you will, even on the internet? Is that it's still computer and you need to kind of shift away from that?
Yeah, the research is pretty clear that these are helpful in very limited ways,
okay.
That the advertising goes way beyond what the actual data shows here. So these things can be good for stimulating your brain in a very specific way, but it doesn't generalize to other things. And that's why we need a wide variety of ways of engaging the brain with the world. They are good for what they do,
mm-hmm.
but the claims are made that this is all you need to do, and it's not true. You need to just engage with many different ways, and that's what brings health to the brain. these things are, it's just very limited is all.
Okay.
It's not a panacea or a way of just taking care of your brain. You need to do a lot more than that. But they're also wonderful and a lot of fun too.
Yeah, absolutely. They certainly are. I'm not into a lot of the games that a lot of people play. I used to work at a video gaming center back in Phoenix before we moved out here. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't get into a lot, you know, the Battlefield type games and the Warcraft and on. I'll take Pac-Man any day. I mean, that's just the era in which I grew up in. But let me ask you about where do IQs come into play here? Is that a factor? Is that something that can be used to measure, the brain stimulation, or is that something totally separate and different from?
That's, I think, is something quite different. That just pertains to kind of an overall general intelligence level. And it's like each of us wants to have the best brain that we can have and become the person that is our deepest, most authentic, truest, best self. And that means having the best brain we can have. And that doesn't mean having a high IQ necessarily. It means having whatever IQ we have and having the skills and talents that go along with our unique brain. Each of us has a unique contribution to make to this planet. And finding out what that is and actually bringing that into the world, it turns out, is really great for your brain. It's like our brain wants us to use it. It wants us to engage. It wants us to become all that we can be. And when we do that, our rate of neurogenesis soars. When we ignore that, when we aren't using our full capacities, our rate of neurogenesis, our level of cognition, the functioning of our brain declines. So whatever rate or whatever level of IQ we have, we simply need to use that in whatever form, however we want to manifest that, whatever our gifts are, that's what we need to use. And IQ is just one measure and one that has some criticism associated with it in terms of the cultural bias that it may have. It's just one type of intelligence, but there's many other types of intelligence that many other types of brain functioning that wouldn't necessarily show up in an IQ test, but which also enrich our world.
Mm. What about the phrase that I've heard this for years, that we only use 10% of our brain? So when we start talking about neurogenesis, one might ask, well, what's the point? So we are regenerating cells. If we're only using 10%, what difference is that regeneration going to make? Do you believe that we're only using 10%, or do we just not understand yet the all of the elements of our brain that are being utilized?
Yeah, that statement, if we only use 10% of our brain, I remember hearing many years ago also and thinking, wow, it's wonderful to think that we have so much more potential. And although there may be a truth to it, I think contemporary neuroscience no longer believes that. That was a statement made decades ago. And I think most neuroscientists these days think we use, you know, most of our brain. We could use more, and we could also have more brain to use. That is, we can increase our rate of neurogenesis, and that increases everything. It increases our cognitive capacities. It increases our emotional resilience. It increases our immunity. And if we're also doing spiritual practice, it increases the spiritual dimension as well. So we can operate at a higher level, but the brain needs to support that, which means we need to be at a higher rate of neurogenesis, a higher rate of making new brain cells. Most of us are just operating below what we could, but that doesn't have to do with the percentage of the brain we're using. We're mostly using most of what's there, but we can get more brain actually manifested, actually born. So I think those are, I think that 10% figure now is no longer, it's seen more as an urban myth.
Do you think that we're using our full capacity in as much as the level of, I'll put it this way, I guess if I'm using the term correctly, the level of neurogenesis that we have at this moment, we're using the capacity, but we can increase that capacity by, yes, by encouraging more neurogenesis.
That's right. That's okay. It exactly.
Okay.
That's right.
Before we wrap up our program, first of all, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of what I know is a very busy schedule to share with us your story and this whole story of the neurogenesis aspect of diet and lifestyle. And encourage you that if you find yourself coming south to Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. It's fascinating.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'd love to. This has been a real pleasure for me.
Before we wrap up, I have three final questions for you. Mm-hmm. And the first one is, who is Brent Courtwright?
That's a very good question, a very profound question. I suppose it depends on which level of identification we're talking about. At my deepest level, deepest levels of consciousness, a soul, a spiritual being, a presence. But in terms of this level of social identification, I'm a professor at the California Institute of Integral Studies, professor of psychology there, and I'm a clinical psychologist and a father and an avid hiker.
Great places to hike up there, I'm sure.
Yes.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, I wanted to do two things. One, I wanted the world to know about neurogenesis. I want everybody on the planet to know that they can operate at a higher level and that their brain is now functioning at a lower level than it needs to, and that everybody can increase their rate of neurogenesis and the quality of their lives. And the second thing is, I want to increase the brain function of everybody on the planet. So, two modest goals with the book.
And who inspires you?
Who inspires me? Sri Aurobindo is a teacher of integral yoga. He's dead now in India, and he has been a great inspiration to me. Krishnamurti is another meditation teacher who is also now dead, who has been a great inspiration to me. And John of God in Brazil, who is a Brazilian healer, is another inspiration to me.
Well, again, I want to thank you for sharing your time with us and your information. And I encourage people to go to, actually, there are two websites that you can go to. One is obviously the name of our guest on the program today, and that is BrentCourtwright.com. But you can also go to the website regarding the book, which you'll find at either website, but NeurogenesisDiet.com. That's NeurogenesisDiet.com. And the Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle title of the book, Upgrading Your Brain, Upgrading Your Life. And Brant, thank you again so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you, and thank you for helping spread the word about neurogenesis.
We sure need to. I tell you what, we we seem to see a lot of people who could certainly use a lot of help, and even us as individuals, we can. I guess you can never have enough, if you will, as far as the capacity. It seems limitless, especially when you start talking from an emotional, a spiritual perspective. It's just limitless. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.